World's Pack Your Play series, presenting Pinocchio this weekend with afternoon and evening shows. All seats are $6. Visit RacineTheater.org. Introducing kids to the magic of live theater since 1933.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Racine Symphony's Young Artist Competition will be held Sunday, February 14th at First Presbyterian Church on College Avenue, beginning at 1 o'clock. The competition will continue until all of the musicians have performed. The event is free and open to the public.
'24/7 Jazz on WGTD HD2. Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more, airing right now on HD2. For more information, go to WGTD.org or dial 564-3030.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning, listeners. This is Marlo Harmon, your host for today's Community Matters with WGTD 91.1 HD. And today we have a special guest. There's a lot of things that are going on in Racine County with regards to the school board and how they're going about selecting new school board members. And today I have a special guest who's actually running for the second time for the Racine School Board and its district. And her name is Adrienne Moore, and she's the regional attorney manager for Racine Region of the State Public Defender's Office. Adrienne, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
I am glad to have you here. Now, there has been a lot of controversy and just a kind of a lot of back and forth with what's going on and the new changes in the Racine Unified School District and how they're going about selecting the upcoming board this coming April. And there's primaries, and so you are actually vying for a school board position, and you will be hopefully elected this coming Tuesday. So I'm interested in just kind of knowing a little bit about you and what you plan on bringing to this new position. And so it is a pleasure to have you here today. So right now in your current job, could you tell me some of your duties and your tasks with the Public Defender's Office?
Absolutely. I've been with the Public Defender's Office now for 20 years. February 6th is my anniversary.
Oh.
So I am the regional attorney manager for the Racine region of the Public Defender's Office. What that means is that I manage both the Racine and the Kenosha trial offices of the Public Defender's Office.
Okay.
There are managers under me that also assist me in managing those offices. We have between the two offices about 43 employees.
Mm-hmm.
I also take on serious felony cases in the region, such as your homicide case or sexual assaults. I represent indigent individuals, so those are people who are poor and do not have enough money in order to hire or retain an attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And so the law indicates that they are entitled to an attorney.
Okay.
So we provide representation to those individuals.
Okay. So how does your background working with the individuals that you work with and especially being in your position for the last 20 years, how do you think that that is going to help you and add value to the position of school board member?
Well, I see my position at the school board similar to my position with the Public Defender's Office in that I'm an advocate.
Okay.
So I advocate for those who cannot advocate for themselves.
Okay.
So I would see my position on the school board as an advocate for our children. So I'm a zealous advocate when it comes to indigent defense, and I would be a zealous advocate when it comes to our children. So every decision that I make on a school board would keep in mind what's best for the children.
Okay.
First and foremost.
Mm-hmm. Some of the things that are going on that I know that are impacting the children, a little bit of what I understand, there's one main thing is the serious achievement gap between certain students, especially children of color compared to other children, mm-hmm. and some of the needs that they may have. How do you think that your background can work to, you know, decrease the achievement gap? Or is that something that you even think is necessary to work on?
Oh, absolutely. There's an achievement gap. If you talk with administrators at Unified, they will admit to you that there is an achievement gap. And they are working on that achievement gap. They indicate that there has been some improvement, but of course, the improvement is not enough. So one of the ways that I think that you can work on an achievement gap is you have to have standards for all the children.
Okay.
So you can't have, based on a person's background, mm-hmm. you know, a different standard for them because you think that, you know, maybe they can't do what another child can do. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. When I was going to school at Racine Unified, and keep in mind I had excellent teachers at Racine Unified, but you know, I think that sometimes people make assumptions based on what you're going through, the amount of money that they think that you may have.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
You know, even sometimes race, unfortunately, may play a factor. But I had a particular teacher when I was in middle school, mm-hmm. and I was in advanced classes mm-hmm. When it came to English and writing and things like that. So I was getting a C in one of these advanced classes, uh-huh. and my mother went to the school to find out, you know, what do I need to do in order to get better than a C? And she talked with the teacher, and the teacher said, oh, the C is good enough, you know. She's like, no, it's not good enough because she's going to go to college, and so we need for her to get better grades. And the teacher said that, she, you know, I was not college material.
Really?
Really.
And this was in middle school?
This was in middle school.
The teacher was already assuming that you weren't ready for college in middle school?
Correct. So the teacher had made an assumption. I don't know what the reason for the assumption was, uh-huh. but, you know, my mother is an educator. So, you know, she promptly told him, oh, no, she will be going to college. So you need to let us know what she needs to do in order to do better. And quite frankly, I did much better in that class after she had that conversation with the teacher.
That's good.
So, you know, I think that, you know, teachers, educators, administrators, you know, the fact of the matter is we all come with some type of bias in life. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that we don't allow our biases to affect how we do our job. Mm-hmm. And so as a teacher, an educator, you have to have the same standards. So it may be that you think that your student is having a hard life, and they may be having mm-hmm. that hard life.
Right.
But it's incumbent upon you to have the same standard for that student that you would have for another student. And you'd be surprised that when a student understands that you're not going to give up on them,
right,
that they are going to excel.
Now, see, what I've just gotten out of your story right mm-hmm. now, you advocate for those who the student, you want to advocate for the students who may not necessarily advocate for themselves.
Correct.
And you just told the story about how your mom advocated for you. So I can only imagine that
correct.
That strength of advocating for someone mm-hmm. that you know has the potential came from the background that somebody advocated for you, your
absolutely.
Mom.
Absolutely.
How are you going to work to advocate for students that may not have the parental background or that parental support like you have had? How can you work with the students and or teachers or administration in this position, and the parents may not necessarily be in a position or even know themselves mm-hmm. how to speak up for their child or how to advocate for their child? How can you bring your passion for that to this position?
Well, I think that you have to work with parent groups in order to let them
very
know
good idea actually
how to advocate for their child. I think uh-huh. you know, most people love their children,
yes,
without a doubt. even when they're suffering from, you know, like alcohol abuse or drug abuse, or they don't have a job, you know, they love their children. They want to advocate for their children, mm-hmm. but they don't necessarily know how. Right. You know, they haven't been given a lot of information to be able to advocate for their children. So, you know, my mother was an educator, so she wasn't going to back down when a teacher told her what her child was or was not, because she knew her child better than the teacher did, right? So I think that parents have to be empowered to advocate for their children in a respectful way, of course, because you don't want there to be a disrespectful dialogue and then the dialogue is shut down with the teacher or administrator. But they have to be given the skills necessary to be able to advocate for their children. I also, you know, think that I don't know if the school district has gone through any type of implicit bias training, but I think that that's necessary because, you know, quite frankly, I wouldn't even thought that I had any biases until I actually took the test. You know, it's a Harvard test that you can actually take.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can take a Harvard test, and it will show you whether or not you actually have some type of bias. And it could be race, it could be gender. You know, it's a lot of different biases that people might have, and they don't even know that they have them until they take the test.
Right.
So when you know that you maybe have a certain bias, then you can work against treating people based on that that bias that you might have. So, you know, I hope that the school district does have that type of training for all of its employees. I certainly would advocate for them to have it. But I think that the first thing that we need to do in order to, you know, cut that gap is we have to have the same standards for all the children.
So when you say same standards, I'm assuming same educational standards, same testing standards and things like that. What other key issues you think should be addressed by school board members that probably isn't being addressed right now? Making sure that teachers are trained to understand their probably unknown biases is one. Teachers being more advocating and working with parents. But what are some other key issues you think should be addressed and that you plan to address in your role if you get it?
Well, you know, I don't like to talk about what the school board members are not doing because, you know, I'm not on the school board and I don't have the same information that they have. So I don't know that what decisions I would make if I had that type of information.
Good point.
And so, you know, therefore, you know, I want my campaign to be, you know, very positive and about what Adrian Moore stands for, not about, you know, what they're not doing. So, you know, certainly I have a postcard that I put out to the public that talks about that I'm dedicated to safe schools for all, and I'm committed to closing the achievement gap, and that I certainly want to do it in a fiscally responsible manner. And I think that certainly we can accomplish that. Like I said, in terms of the achievement gap, you really have to work with the teachers. The teachers are key for closing that achievement gap. We have excellent teachers at Racine Unified School District. Very educated teachers at Racine Unified School District. So I know that they're working on this issue, but I just think with some tweaking, I think we could get some better results.
Now, I am a product of the Racine Public School District, and my experience while in school, although several years ago, it really was positive. And my child was raised in the public school district, and he's an excellent gentleman now. Do you see any difference from Racine Unified School District and how they have operated back when we were in school, because we actually went to school, went to high school together.
Correct.
But when we were in school, do you see a difference between then and now? And if so, what are those differences? And if you haven't seen any differences, how do you plan on continuing to work on those strengths?
Okay. Well, when I went to Racine Unified School District, it was touted as one of the premier school districts in the country, quite frankly. that is not the dialogue that you hear today about Racine Unified School District.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate. You know, there have been many teachers of color who are retired from the school district at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it is a struggle for the school district to get those teachers of color again.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that is one issue that I think that, you know, this district is going to have to work on. I also think that the community dialogue about the school district has changed. And mm-hmm. I think that that is one of the things that I really want to work on changing. You know, it's incumbent upon the community to work on their school district. It's not just incumbent upon 9 school board members to work on mm-hmm. the school district mm-hmm. or the administrators or the teachers
mm-hmm.
or the students. You know, the community has to back mm-hmm. its school district because it's really something that's going to be advantageous for us all.
Uh-huh.
You know, businesses will come to a place where the school district is thriving.
That's true.
Families want to raise their children and stay in a place where the school district is thriving.
Mm-hmm.
House values go up in a place where the school district is thriving.
Mm-hmm.
So whether you have children in the school district or not, it's incumbent upon us all that this school district actually becomes successful because our values, our house values, our businesses, you know, if we don't have those things, then, you know, our community
mm-hmm.
is going to die. So we have to change that dialogue about this school district. Now, there are some things that they are putting in place that I think are interesting
okay.
and may actually advance, you know, changing the dialogue about our school district.
Such as?
So I have heard some things about, you know, this block scheduling.
I've heard a lot about the block scheduling. There seems to be some controversy, though, over the block schedule.
I agree. Now, the good thing about the block scheduling is that it's...
Could you explain it a little bit?
Sure. So block scheduling is supposed to be where you go from a system where you had 50-minute classes to a system where you would have 90-minute classes, and you wouldn't necessarily have the same classes every day. So it sets up a system that would be similar to like a college system.
Mm-hmm.
So it says that it's trying to set a system whereby you have the child ready to go to advanced school yes. by the time that they graduate. So in theory, it sounds pretty good.
It sounds good.
So, you know.
But there's controversy
about
it. But there
definitely is controversy about it because the teachers are indicating that they don't believe that they can provide this block scheduling in the time frame that the administrators are indicating that mm-hmm. it needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And they also are indicating that they don't feel like they're going to have the training necessary in order to provide the block scheduling in the time frame that the administrators are indicating that it needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at other places that have done block scheduling, certainly you've had some mixed reviews. There are some places that absolutely love it and think it is the best thing ever.
Mm-hmm.
Even some teachers who absolutely love it and think it's the best thing ever. And then there are some places that don't necessarily like it.
Agree with that. Huh?
And, you know, I was at a school board meeting where they were talking about there are some places where, you know, some teachers were allowing students to basically nap for 15 minutes in the block scheduling, which certainly we don't want that to happen with the block scheduling. That's not what it's supposed to be for. But I think that if the teachers certainly get the training that they need, mm-hmm. I think that they will be able to implement this. It could be a good thing, especially for those kids who are a little bit behind.
Uh-huh.
Maybe they would have a little bit more time to catch up, and the teachers could work with them a little bit more than they could in a 50-minute class.
Mm-hmm.
And also the fact that the class wouldn't be every day. You know, maybe the student would be able to take some time and study a little bit for the next time the class came around.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the downside to that is if you miss a class, then you're going to be behind.
Right.
So, you know, there's some pluses and some minuses with the block scheduling. But if it could be done well and it sets our children up to, you know, for advanced education, then it could be a good thing.
One of the things that you are running on is you're dedicated to safe schools for all. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine with your background, mm-hmm. Being a trial attorney, mm-hmm. and your 20 years of experience in that and understanding the criminal dynamics and that of the Racine area, mm-hmm. that would be good for this. That background I can completely understand is good for being dedicated to schools, safety for all. Mm-hmm. How do you plan on making sure, or what are one of the things that you're planning on adding to ensure this? And then a second question, this is kind of like a twofold question. How is that going to, that experience and knowledge and background, how do you think that it'll assist with decreasing some issues with discipline of the students, especially mm-hmm. among children of color? There seems to be a lot more children of color being disciplined as far as expulsions and suspensions, mm-hmm. write-ups. How can your background or knowledge in decreasing crime or working towards that and making schools safe mm-hmm. still decrease the disciplinary issues that are going on?
Well, I actually was at a school board meeting where they showed a video regarding middle school, mm-hmm. okay? And the video asked the kids at the school, how much did violence impact them mm-hmm. at the school? Uh-huh. And I was really surprised by the video, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. They indicated that it's not that much violence at their school. Mm-hmm. They said that they really didn't see a lot of fights at their school whatsoever. Mm-hmm. They said that they were not afraid to go to school. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I think that the perception may not be the same as the reality. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people who perceive that, you know, there's fights every day at school. There's all this bullying going on. The child can't get an education because people are fighting around the child's mm-hmm. head and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. quite frankly, that's not what the kids said. The kids said the exact opposite. Now, with that said, we do have law enforcement in our schools at this point.
Mm-hmm. Which we didn't have years ago. We didn't have that.
We did not.
Is that perception or reality that it's necessary?
Well, here's the thing. I think that if you're going to have either hall monitors or police officers in the school, you have to have, some training for both. Mm-hmm. So that people know that you're not going to treat a discipline problem the same way you would treat a criminal problem, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, schools should know how to deal with behavior problems or discipline problems. You don't need to call the police about behavior problems or discipline problems, right?
Right.
However, if it's a criminal issue, mm-hmm. then certainly I think the police officers should be involved. Mm-hmm. Now, I do think that there's some benefit to police officers having a presence, and so children know that, especially children of color mm-hmm. who, you know, may not trust the police. Mm-hmm. I think it's valuable to show police officers in a position where they're friendly and they're engaging students and they're learning about mm-hmm. the students' lives and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. I think that that's valuable. But I don't think it's valuable to utilize the police for behavior or discipline problems. Mm-hmm. And that should not happen. Uh-huh. So I think that what I would want to do if I were a school board member yeah. is I'd want to check what type of training are they receiving. I've heard that they are receiving training, mm-hmm. But quite frankly, you know, working where I work, I do see some issues where I think, I think maybe the school could have dealt with that
instead of
you know, it being law enforcement involved. So I do think that maybe some more training might be needed in that area.
I really like that, and I think that is a very key thing to discuss, that mm-hmm. law enforcement really should be dealing with things that are criminal.
Correct.
And behavior issues with children, mm-hmm. you can receive the training and work with them and, mm-hmm. and use some dialogue and some right. behavior modification to work with them.
Exactly.
Very good point. Again, listeners, this is Marlo Harmon, your host for Community Matters with WGTD 91.1 HD. Again, we are speaking with Adrienne Moore, who is the Regional Attorney Manager for the Racine Region of the State Public Defender's Office, and she is seeking election to the Racine Unified School District 7, and the voting for the primary is Tuesday, February 16th. Adrienne, could you give me your thoughts about the charter schools? There seems to be a lot of new pop-up schools, charter schools, and that are in the area. Mm-hmm. How do you think that that either helps, benefits, or challenge our public school district and the children? Just give me your opinions about charter schools in the area.
Well, I have researched charter schools just to see if there's actually a benefit to them, mm-hmm. as opposed to the public school system, okay. because, of course, they are receiving public dollars.
Yes.
And my research has shown that really there is not a significant difference between charter schools and the public school system. In mm-hmm. fact, some studies would suggest that the public school system is educating our children better than the charter schools. Now, that's not to say that, you know, the charter school teachers aren't excellent, mm-hmm. or that the students that go to charter schools aren't wonderful. But, you know, when you're going to have something different and you're going to utilize public dollars in order to have that something mm-hmm. different, then I think that there should be a reason to have it.
Okay.
Especially when it's costing the taxpayers money yeah. in order for it to happen. Yeah. So, you know, I do see the reason why people want it. They want a choice. So they want to be able to say, you know what, I want my child to go to this different school. Maybe that school has less students, and I think that my child would benefit from a school that has less students. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the class sizes might be a little bit smaller than the public school system. Or even, you know, maybe the charter school system has the choice of not accepting some kids that might have behavior problems, but the public school system doesn't have that choice. Mm-hmm. So I certainly understand why some people might argue for it, but in terms of a cost savings, it doesn't save any money, mm-hmm. and it doesn't produce a better product. And so if it doesn't save any money and it doesn't produce a better product, then I have to say that if you're going to be fiscally responsible, mm-hmm. you probably wouldn't have it.
Okay. All right. Well, I do know that earlier this week, the RUSD board discussed starting a Montessori school-type mm-hmm. program.
Mm-hmm.
Could you provide me any information on that or your thoughts about Montessori school programs through the Racine Unified School District?
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts on that and how it could either mm-hmm. benefit or maybe challenge our current system of educating our students?
Well, I was at that same meeting where I heard also about the Montessori school. I think that it's relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they just rolled that out at that particular school board meeting. I have to say I don't have a lot of information on Montessori mm-hmm. schools. I heard about it being more of a tactile type of program with the students 3 to 5 mm-hmm. years old. You know, half of the building would be dedicated to like a recreational area mm-hmm. where people could pay to go there, and therefore it would pay for the school.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I certainly like the fact that they said that it was going to pay for the school, but, you know,
and
they indicated
something about being the program is going to allow the students to kind of use all of their senses.
Correct.
So that mm-hmm. as they learn, it's more of all of your being mm-hmm. in the learning experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
how you touch things and how things look in more bright colors and a little bit more organized, and how that should add some structure.
Right.
Possibly.
And it sounded beneficial. I'd have to know more information about it.
Mm-hmm.
I did hear, you know, information about it would be limited. So
yes.
the, you know, it would be a certain number of students could go to this school.
Mm-hmm. They did say that.
So, you know, I would really want to know how would they determine who was going to be able to go to that school.
Very good point. That is a very good point.
So, you know, I can't say that I know a lot of information about it. I don't think that anybody really knows that much information about it because it was just rolled out.
Mm-hmm.
But I would want to know how they would choose who would be able to go to the school.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that, you know, basically this building that costs over $5 million is going to pay for itself.
Mm-hmm.
Based on, you know, the recreational area. So I guess I would have to know more information about it before I'd be able to speak on it.
Well, I know one thing that kind of created a red flag for me mm-hmm. was one point where they were saying it was going to be like a 30-to-1 ratio.
Right.
There were going to be like 30 children mm-hmm. to a teacher and
right.
the teacher assistants.
Right.
And my understanding, one, is that mm-hmm. the smaller the class size, mm-hmm. the better opportunity the teacher has to, one, have better control over the class, and two,
right.
give the undivided attention that is needed for the schooling so that the student can get their individual needs met. So that was one thing. And then the second thing, I think it said something about, and we were at the same meeting, so mm-hmm. correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't remember everything.
Right.
But they said something about the children will be, because they're starting at a smaller age,
right.
the children will be in various different areas of the classroom working on various different things all at the same time. And I'm trying to wrap my head around how... how you're going to keep control of 3 to 5 year olds when one is working on math and the other is working on reading and the other one wants to play.
Right.
And there's 30 of them. 30
right.
of them.
Right.
So, you know, I know that it's new,
mm-hmm.
but it just seemed a little different. And maybe that's one of the reasons why
mm-hmm.
I can't visualize how it will work. But those two things, the larger class size. What's
Correct.
Your thoughts on that for our students and meeting their individual needs?
Right. Well, here's the thing. Like I said, I don't know enough about the program to be able to speak on it and say whether or not this would be advantageous for our students or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly I know that the science says that a smaller class size is better.
Mm-hmm.
For our children.
That's what I believe.
But, you know, it's not always possible to have a smaller class size. But when you're dealing with 3 to 5 year olds, you are correct. I mean, their attention span is
mm-hmm.
not that long.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I can perceive a situation where there
would
be, you know, a little bit of a loss of control
uh-huh.
In that classroom. But I don't really want to talk about something that I really,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't have enough information on it to say one way or another
no, that's
whether or not I agree with it.
Okay. Tell me then how you are going to, how do you plan to work effectively with all of the school board members
mm-hmm.
and the superintendent
mm-hmm.
effectively. How do you plan? Because right now it mm-hmm. seems like the school board is so divided.
Mm-hmm.
And if, even with this new election,
mm-hmm.
there's still that division.
Mm-hmm.
How do you plan to work effectively with them, but specifically with the superintendent in the role?
Well, I've actually met each and every one of the school board members, and quite frankly, they all seem like they're very nice
mm-hmm.
individuals, very passionate about what they do. You know, I actually clocked the hours that they would have to spend in January just to do the job of a school board member.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, the number of hours that they would have clocked in January was over 10 hours
mm.
just to do their job. So,
uh-huh.
you know, you have to be passionate about something
yeah.
in order to go to meetings that last that long. So... you know, while I do think that there are some situations where they are very divided, quite frankly, for the most part, I don't think they're all that divided
mm-hmm.
on
it doesn't seem
most
like they
issues.
Really are, yeah.
On most issues, I don't believe they're that divided. Now, certainly this handbook issue, they're divided on it.
Mm-hmm.
and some other issues they're a little bit divided on, but quite frankly, they seem to get along pretty well, and they seem to have a genuine respect for one another. So if I were to be a member of the school board, I certainly have a genuine respect for people. And, you know, I respect difference of opinion. And, you know, I am an independent thinker. So, you know, I don't align myself with one particular group because what I do is I look at all of the information and I make a decision based on the information that's in front of me that's going to provide the best level of education for our children. So the number one thing that I look at is it going to help the children? So if that hurts somebody's feelings that I vote a certain way when I think it's going to hurt, if it's going to help our children, then that's too bad. That's what I'm going to do. But, you know, I'm certainly willing to listen to anyone's position. You know, certainly Adrian Moore doesn't know it all. You know, I'm not an educator. I'm a lawyer. So, you know, I certainly don't know everything about education. So, you know, I certainly would listen to an educator who would tell me something and say, you know, this is the reason why something wouldn't work. And I certainly would listen to that and evaluate it and see what I thought. But, you know, I'm going to make a decision based on the children.
Now, I think your district and just one other district is going through the primary?
Correct.
Okay, so District 7 and District...
I believe it's District 4.
District 4. All right. Now, why are you better prepared to be school board member compared to the other individuals that may be running for District 7? What will you add that's better, that's, you know, superb?
Well, I think I add a different perspective than the board member that's there. Don Nielsen is the board member that's in
the
district.
The incumbent.
That's in District 7. He's an extremely nice man. I've had many conversations with Mr. Nielsen. Very pleasant individual, very kind individual, very thoughtful individual.
I would have to agree.
I like him a lot. He indicated that he would like to run for school board one more time. He has been there for, I believe, I want to say 16 or 17 years. He's been on the school board. And, you know, quite frankly, it's not that I see myself running against Mr. Nielsen. I just see myself as better than anybody. I think I'm the best choice. So, you know, while I respect him and I like him, I just think I'm a better choice. You know, I intend to run for school board again if I win. It would only be a year term. If I win, I would run again so I could get the 3-year term. So, you know, hopefully I would be there for at least 4 years. And I think that there are changes that are significant. And I think you need more than a year in order to provide those changes. So I believe I would just be a better choice.
Now, this isn't your first time at the rodeo.
Correct.
This is actually your second time running. The first time you ran was?
I believe in 2006 I ran. Yeah, I was much younger.
All right. What's different between the Adrian Moore then that was running in 2006 and it's 2016, 10 years ago, compared to this Adrian Moore now?
Well, what I would say is that, you know, when I ran in 2006, I can't say that I really appreciated how big a deal it was. You know, I didn't appreciate what was needed in order to run back then. You know, I didn't appreciate how many mailings you were going to have to do and how you were going to have to go door to door. You know, I did get quite a few votes, which I was surprised by because, you know, I didn't do any door to door. You know, I would talk to different people and I would go to different functions and I would talk to them there. But, you know, I just didn't really realize what a big job it was to run for school board. So now, 10 years later, I do recognize what a big job it is to run for school board and the importance of it. So I have taken it very seriously.
A little bit more commitment?
Very much committed to it. And so I, and you know, certainly I think I'm a little bit more responsible than I was 10 years ago.
Right.
At least I'd like to think it. I'd like to think I'm a little bit more mature, a little bit more responsible than I was 10 years ago. And so, you know, I actually have a strategy where, you know, 10 years ago I didn't have a strategy. I can't say I did, but I have a strategy now in order to run for school board.
All right. Okay. And then the very last question. Is there anything as far as what our community, anything that's going on in our community that may be impacting our students or impacting the parents that you see, is something that you would definitely want to address either with regards to safety or closing the achievement gap or being a little bit more fiscally responsible? Anything in the community that may impact that you know of that can help with your overall goal of bringing what your different ideas and values to this position?
Well, I think that the most significant impact that I see in the criminal justice system is drug use.
Oh, yes.
And certainly that impacts children. I really think that we need to provide some treatment for children if we can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that there is a no tolerance policy within the school district.
Mm-hmm.
But I would hope that in addition to that no tolerance policy, that they are willing to provide some treatment for children, because we have to recognize that drug addiction is just that. It's
mm-hmm.
a disease.
Yes.
And when you see people coming through the criminal justice system, they have been using drugs since the age of 11 and 12 and 13
and that is true.
Years old.
That's true.
And, you know, maybe if we could have provided some type of treatment for these individuals early on,
mm-hmm.
then they wouldn't be the adults in the criminal justice system.
Uh-huh.
So I'm hoping that the school system could partner with someone and provide some type of treatment for the students.
Awesome. I love that. And that's actually just being a little bit more proactive.
Correct.
Getting them at a younger age and assisting with that can definitely prevent some of the issues as they get older.
Exactly.
So, Adrian, if somebody wanted to provide some volunteer hours or services to help you in your campaign, how can they find out more information about you or reach out to you if they wanted to?
Oh, they can reach out to my Facebook page.
All right. And
yes.
Is it Adrian Moore? Is it Attorney
mm-hmm.
Adrian Moore?
It's Adrian Moore.
All right.
And you can't miss it. It's bright red on the internet. Or they can certainly send some information to P.O. Box 413, Racine, Wisconsin, 53401.
Perfect.
Adrian Moore for School Board.
All right. Thank you again so much for joining us. And listeners, thank you for being with us today in Community Matters. Again, this is Marlo Harmon, your host for today's Community Matters, where it is a pleasure to always speak with you about issues that impact our community so that we can be overall effective and provide some value to our cities. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
Support for WGTD comes from Carthage College, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information is available online at carthage.edu/grad.
Support comes from Gateway Technical College, with 2-year business management degrees leading to good-paying management careers in sales and marketing, real estate, financial services, warehousing facilities, logistics, human resources, and many others. For more information, go to gtc.edu.
24/7 Jazz WGTD HD2 is now available on your smartphone. To hear jazz, big band, and blues, go to the App Store and download the free app. HD2 is still available at WGTD.org or over the air in the Kenosha Racine area via HD Radio.
24/7 Jazz on WGTD HD2. Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more, airing right now on HD2. For more information, go to WGTD.org or dial 564-33.